Yo. Can you hear me?
You listening to
What a week.
Hey, Ta. How are you guys doing? Welcome to another episode of Wow, What a Week. Hashtag the Q&A, the DMs, whatever it is that you want to call it. We did this about a month and a half ago. We said we'd do it once a month. And we're back again with another edition of You Ask the Questions. And hopefully, I answer to the best of my ability, knowledge, and gees and krach. The questions will determine the honesty and the depth of the answer. I hope I'm making sense. Our behind the scenes more major is here.
Hi.
She doesn't want to be on camera, so she'll just ask from behind the scenes. Hello, Kels. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's been a whirlwind couple of days with the Kaya news that came out.
Oh, the Kaya news. Yeah. It's been a long time coming, to tell you the honest truth, because the conversation with Kaya actually started just as... Actually, I've had various Kaya conversations when Greg was at Kaya. And then I think 2017, 2018, it came up again. And then I had the fallout with the SABC, and then Kaya came again. But Kaya came at the same time as 947.
Yeah.
And they actually had a bidding war. At some stage within the bidding war, I was even offered sign-on bonuses. And what happened was... The conversation I had with Greg was, I can't do Kaya before I do 947. So let me rather scratch the 947 itch and then go settle at Kaya. So that was the conversation we had with Greg back in 2018. So it's been a long time coming. So yeah.
Okay, but how do you, as a person that's got inside, you've had four radio, I won't mention their names, you've had four radio stations in the past 2.5 years approach you.
Yeah.
Some even asked if you would relocate with your kids and family. How do you pick which one to go with?
Firstly, I have to be a fan of your brand. I'm not going to work for a radio station if I'm not a fan of the work they do already. So if I'm not already a listener of the radio station, chances are I'm not going to want to work there, because I want to work where already I'm a fan, man. Already I'm peeping through the window to see what they're doing, how they're doing it. And so for me, it's that. So what didn't help was Greg then calling myself an Onati and saying that, listen, there's a frequency that is currently in the middle of a tug of war over the frequency. But if all things go right, I'm going to need you guys to come and join me at 938. So that's actually how 938 happened. Unfortunately, I'm a sucker for, if Greg says we're going to war, my first question is, do we leave at dawn or are we going now?
Isn't that how you started YFM?
That's why we were both auditioning, and then he got a management role straight out of his audition. And then he became the guy that hired me. But we've always had that kind of relationship with Greg, that if he calls, I ask later. So if Greg says there's a radio body we need to bury, I'll help him bury the body and then ask him, so whose body was that? That's my level of trust I have in Greg whenever he says, let's go, you want to do this with me.
938.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of people assume that you guys bought the station, started your own station. I think they thought it would be like a Cliff Central.
Sure.
I think Ops Morolong. I saw when Kaya announced the lineup, that you are joining them. He tweeted, sometimes stepping away from entrepreneurship and returning to corporate is less about giving up and more about regrouping.
Sure.
Creating space to breathe, rebuild networks and raise capital before taking another swing. Mm-hmm. I've been there. I'm wishing him luck. And someone also asked, what about his radio station? Speaking about 938.
Sure.
Is it going to be they wrote simulcast. I think they wanted to write.
A syndication.
Yeah,
a syndicated show, yeah. Firstly, Ops Morolong, shout out to you. I think first things first, we need to maybe deal with the elephant in the room. The day I own a radio station, I will be making the most noise about it. So the fact that people took a narrative that myself and O'Native started a radio station and ran with it is what it is. You know what I mean? And yes, part of the contract included equity, but it wasn't enough equity for me to make enough, to make so much noise about it. You know, for me, unless equity is 30, 40, 50%, then, you know, yes, you might be on the board, but are you going to make noise about it? I don't know. So that's what it was. You know, the long and the short of it was 938 did not go according to everything that we had been promised would happen. That's why it eventually became easy to actually walk away. Because we were sold what we were sold and we bought into what we were bought into. And actually don't have any regrets about it though, because I did the radio I wanted to do on my own terms without anyone sitting on my shoulder and saying, don't do this, don't do that. So it was a necessary journey which allowed myself and Thato to reconnect after 20 years. So now that we are, for instance, going to be starting at Kaya, myself, Thato, and obviously reuniting Limpo, my boy, I think we needed the 938 runway to prepare us for the takeoff that's about to happen. So it was still a necessary evil that I got a 938.
People saw that as a downgrade because you've got over 30 years under your belt in media, and then you're going to a radio station that's literally building from scratch.
Sure.
You guys were built, like, even studios and, like, everything around it.
Mm.
Why did you do that? Because
I did it because I believed in the bigger dream for the brand. And unfortunately, new brands have to start from scratch. You can't start a new brand from the top if you're building from scratch. So, and I'm at a stage in my career that I have nothing to prove to anyone. I have the luxury of being able to say, there's a new project and they want me on the lineup. I don't mind doing that as long as I get to do it on my own terms. And that's what we got to do. So yeah, like I said, depending on what an upgrade and a downgrade look like. For me, I'm at a stage in my life where I want to try new things, where I've got the balls to say, I will try this. If it doesn't work, I'll try something else. So, yeah. It's actually a liberating state of mind to be at, to be able to make calls like that. And sometimes those calls won't necessarily be the best financial decisions you make, but they're always worth the shot. And I'm glad I took that shot.
How would you advise someone that could be in a similar position? I know it's probably from a place of privilege financially to be able to take something that might pay you R5 as opposed to taking something that's going to pay you R25.
To tell you the honest truth, I needed the money regardless, but I still took the plunge anyway, because I believe in my ability to regroup. So it's not even from a place of privilege. It's more from a place of, I understand the value I bring to any table that I come to. And maybe that is privilege in itself, but it was still a risk. A risk is still a risk. A rand is still a rand. Who doesn't need a rand? In fact, my finances are probably half messy because of this move that I made in the first place. But it was worth it.
You wouldn't go back and do it differently?
If they regroup and do things properly, I'm not going to close that door completely. Okay. Because I still believe in that dream. And you know, for people who are asking, but why did you not say goodbye? Because you guys were on air on Monday or on Friday, and then Monday you were not.
Yeah.
I'm gonna find a elegant way of putting this.
Speak.
Eh?
Speak. Okay, don't speak.
No, man, I don't like violence. The thing is, things got to a point where staff were not getting paid. And because I've got gigs that I do, that kind of helps. I have savings that I could dip into, that kind of helped. But when you reach a point where you've not been paid for so many months that it stops making financial sense to still show up, that's where I was at. And a part of me is actually upset at myself because that's not how I operate. For me, if you haven't paid me for a month, then I wait and see what you're going to do. I don't keep showing up. So I think for my sins and for my love for radio, I ignored that voice that said, maybe, I don't know, cut the cord for now until you know where things stand in terms of cash flow at the business. But I didn't. And I wish I had. But like I said, and sadly, I did it. All of that happened to the detriment of my cash flow and a whole bunch of other things. But yeah, I reached a point where I said, I haven't been paid. I'm going to stay home until I'm paid. And because the good Lord's timing happens the way that it does, as all of that was happening, I'd gotten another call from Kaya to say, are you keen to do one last dance? And I was like, your timing is actually impeccable. And like I said, unfortunately, the Lord's timing is not yours. He will point you in the direction you need to go when you wonder why you're not in a direction that makes sense to you. So, yeah.
But it wasn't Kaya alone.
It wasn't Kaya. Hence, I'm saying the fact that I turned down like two offers to ride with Greg at 938. But when Greg walked away end of last year, I still stayed because I believed in the dream. But in hindsight, maybe I should have walked with him, to tell you the honest truth. Because if the guy that says, we are doing this, takes a parachute and jumps out, why would you stay on the plane? You know what I mean?
Faith in the pilot.
But because I had faith in the fact that we're building something solid anyway. And I knew that I can fly this thing. But you can't fly the thing if you're not given the tools you need to maintain the thing. That's why eventually I was like, listen, seems like the other parachutes. So let me take mine. But I still believe in the 938 dream. And I think that all things being equal, they'll get it right and they'll build incredible, incredible radio. Yeah. Okay. So I apologize for not saying goodbye, but I was hurtful, but I didn't want to throw them on the bus and say why we were not on air anymore. But the long and the short is we weren't getting paid and we got sick and tired of not getting paid. In fact, people still haven't been paid. I'm still waiting for a couple of months, in fact, more than a couple of months of payment. And still we wait. So hopefully they'll do some. You know what is actually upsetting? What was upsetting was the fact that we were sacrificing monthly to show up for work that wasn't paying us.
Yeah.
But I almost feel like the shareholders were not sacrificing enough in for argument saying, maybe I should sell something so I can pay my staff. Because I would do that. I'll give an example. During COVID, when I had zero income, I still had staff.
Yeah.
I had to go into my savings to pay my staff because I had staff. That's what you do. If people sacrifice for you, you sacrifice for them. You don't sit back and say, there's no money, therefore. Then find the money, especially if people are showing up to work. If people are making sacrifices for your dream, the very least you can do is be a bit uncomfortable and make sacrifices out of your own dream to make sure that they, at the very least, have food on the table. And for me, that's actually what pissed me off and had me say, I'm done here. So, yeah.
You speak about COVID, triggered a memory because we thought 21 days, as the president said, it would literally end up being 8 months of no income.
Yeah.
And the sports and culture department promised money. And then they said I remember I went to the labor department.
Yeah.
And they said to us that, no, I can survive off 7,000 rand a month, even though they see how much we were contributing, like paying your taxes and that and stuff. What financial lessons did you learn then that you still apply now?
What COVID taught me was that the proverbial 3-month nest egg was bullshit. And I mean, I've been putting money aside and doing investments and whatever else, probably since 1997. And since 1997, we've always been told to have 3 months emergency fund. And COVID showed you that 3 months nest egg is nothing. But COVID also showed me that your investments will come in handy when your nest egg dries up. Because that's what happened. I mean, I had to cash in a couple of investments to make sure that I could pay you and all the other stuff. To make sure that your standard of living is not compromised. So I still say put money aside every month, because that money will come to your rescue at some stage. And look beyond just your 3 months emergency fund. If you can do like a unit trust, even if it's just $100 a month, put something away that might compound an interest and might come in handy for you at some stage. And that's what COVID taught me, that stash as much as you can, as often as you can, because you don't know what's going to happen.
How do you, without getting emotional, how?
Why are you getting emotional?
Because I don't even know how to phrase this question. You paid us in COVID when we essentially were not working.
Yeah.
For the past 6 months, you haven't been getting an income elsewhere. Yes, we've been doing other work.
Yeah, but I still paid.
But for your, your comfort and your kids and family and everybody else, black tax that you're supporting, you still pay. Why?
Because if I don't do it, who'll do it? I took you from your mother's house and said, she's coming to work, so she must get paid, surely. You know what I mean? And I'm a big believer in those that have been loyal to you deserve you to break your back a bit sometimes to return the loyalty. And sometimes returning that loyalty is in making sure that your people are okay, even if the income dips. You make a plan, like it goes back to what I was saying, that, I mean, I look at all the staff at 938 and the sacrifices we've made, coming to work without pay for months on end, but still showing up, still delivering at 100%, but almost feeling like, but these MFs can't, for instance, if I ran a radio station and people are showing up every day to work and we're not making the money we're meant to make, or the investor that said they're going to put money in didn't show up, I will sell my car to make sure that my staff are paid. If it means I mortgage my house or I take out a second mortgage, whatever, I would do that. If people are showing up to work, I need to make sure that I reward those people for the work that they do. For me, it makes sense. If people want to sacrifice for you, the very least you can do is sacrifice for them. You can't just say there's no money and think that's the end all and be all, but still expect people to show up. It's rubbish.
Where do you get this word work ethic? Is it from your dad?
It's not even about work ethic. It's just the right thing to do, man. Don't treat people like shit. That's all it is. Just don't treat people like poo. And I'm not a perfect human being, but what I do know, though, is if people work, then pay people. I mean, even my staff at the house know. On a rough months, I'll tell them there's rough months. But my telling there's rough months is not for them to feel insecure about their pay. Mm-hmm. It's just to say to them, whatever wastage you might get away with, can you not be wasteful this month? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And these are conversations I also encourage people to have with our kids without burdening them. So don't, for instance, say to the kids that, you know, the house is full of water now, it's flooded. Just tell them that, listen, there might be a leak here and there, so can we please not be wasteful? Just constantly reminding the kids not to be wasteful. And have them understand that we might not be able to have Pizza Friday this Friday, but there'll be Pizza Friday in 2 weeks. Maybe because you want to take a break or you want to give your wallet a chance to breathe. Do that. Have those conversations with the kids, man.
Did you have that conversation with the kids?
I always have the conversation with the kids. On bad months, I will tell them that, listen, your quality of life is not going to change, but there won't be as many treats as usual. It's how you phrase the thing that will have kids understand.
So how do you, I mean, YBF is 23.
Yeah.
1D 17 and then Lifika is 11.
Yeah.
I understand explaining to the older kids and I mean like Renelo as well.
Sure.
How do you explain to Lifika who's 11 that, and he comes with his kids. I mean, he comes with his friends. I've seen you with him.
Mm.
Like his friends come over, you buy them stuff. There's like ubud madlis.
Not really. I don't even think that, man. I mean, it's literally just saying, so for instance, sometimes I'll do a park run with him and his friends and then we'll go for breakfast somewhere.
Yeah.
They love going to Papachino's. Or I'll tell them that we're going for a park or a run and then I'll go home and make you guys breakfast. And then that is how you offset the money you could have spent there by making the breakfast. or you make breakfast with them. Or you tell them that, listen, my budget is a bit tight this week, but we'll do whatever you want to do next week. You must always almost defer it to another time, but stick to that time. But don't defer it to a time you're not sure of. If you know that next week is not going to happen, don't say we'll do it next week.
Okay.
Yeah. It's also knowing what you're working towards and if there's a leak, how long it'll take to fix it. But I just think, let the kids understand that there won't always be money coming in, but that you're always working hard to make sure they're okay. And I found that it works for me. So yeah.
Speaking about money, there's people in, not radio, in clubs, scenes and promoters that have owed you money.
Mm.
Some for years.
Yeah.
Have a recent person that I've literally been chasing who promised.
Yeah.
And they never delivered.
Mm.
How do you pick when to follow up? Why do you leave the money? Because it's a lot of money.
It's not even about leaving the money. I believe the bed you make, you must lie in eventually. So if you're going to defraud people of money, or if you're not going to pay people that you owe, it catches up with you one way or another. And I believe that lefatshe le tlo go shapa one way or another. Maybe I'm too naive. I mean, a friend of mine took the owner of a mid-rand establishment to the small claims court the other day. He's a DJ. And I think they owed him 20 grand or something, or 15.
Let's go.
And small claims, I think, only does up to 20 or 30. A lot of these people owe us more than that. So yes. we'd have to go to the to the court. Anyway, he took this mid-rand establishment owner to the small claims court. And a sheriff was going to be dispatched to go and sell whatever can be sold at this establishment to pay this guy. So he paid him because he was taken to the small claims court. And maybe that's what needs to happen. Maybe people need to start going that route. If people don't take you seriously, they take you for a puss. But maybe that's what you need to do, you know? And I don't know how I feel about blasting people on social media.
I was going to say, you're the calm one in this relationship. I'm tired of asking people for money. I'm tired because, one, they made promises.
In fact, it's not even a promise. You signed a contract, we delivered the job, and you haven't paid for the job.
They took advantage of the relationship.
Mm.
And then they still host and pay other DJs. That's my thing. It's like, you can say that you're in a bad space, but I can see that you're booking Euphonic. I can see you booking Shimza. I can see you booking everybody else. So that means you've got the money. So why aren't you paying us the rest of the money? Or why aren't you paying us back?
You also need to understand that some promoters have made a life out of hiring Paul to pay Peter. Or they just continue digging holes. I mean, there's another DJ that probably owes every DJ that I know.
Yeah.
But he still shows up at your event like he doesn't owe you. Or he'll come to you and greet you like he doesn't owe you. And for me, I'd be too embarrassed to show up to a gig you're at if I knew I owed you. And I guess it shows you their lack of respect, or they just don't care. Or for them, it's vibes. It's like someone who posts bull about you on social media, and then when they see you, they want to come and hug you, or they want to come and have a nice conversation. And for me, I'm about whatever your energy towards me, keep it consistent.
Yeah.
Like, keep it consistent. I mean, there's a woman who's blocked me on social media. And I met her at Oskido's event the other day. We had like a dinner to honor him for his order of Ikamanga. And she's all chatty and she wants to, and I just looked at her. I'm like, no, why don't we have the same energy, Kanti? Don't, like I said, the thing is, I can't fake being okay with you.
Yeah.
So if I posted bullshit about you, that's how I feel about you. And it's not vibes. It's not just social media. And a lot of people, I think, treat certain things like it never happened. And for me, it's the wildest shit ever. It's the wildest. You know, the other day, Euphonic posted, I think he appeared on a drum magazine crossword.
Yes.
Where they put your picture and then you must fill out the blocks. And he said, and then he was drum magazine famous. And one of the feminazis that came after me and him commented with a smile. And then he sends me a screenshot and he's like, I'm sure this one is actually Wahlang. This is the same person that was pushing for me to go to jail for 15 years. And now she's commenting with a laugh.
They forgave themselves.
And for me, like I said, it defeats me that people operate like that. That the same people that want to lynch you and have you thrown in jail for 15 years will show up a year or two later commenting on your social media with smiles. Like they were not those people.
Like they didn't say anything.
I said, what's wrong?
Come on.
Yo, guys. But anyway, so I told him, listen, now you know why. That's all I said to him.
I'm now one of those people. I feel like Jesus needs to save people with cancer, the war. Sometimes it's not like that. I mean, I don't do it personally, but what? I feel like you should maybe blast these people because it's not small money.
No, I like I said, the weird thing is often the person that is avoiding you or avoiding paying you at some stage will probably need you for something at some stage. And I'm patient enough. I'm so patient. So we will wait.
I want to go back to radio.
Okay.
There was a tweet from Fikalolo One. Says, isn't there enough talent out there? Recycling same people on radio has become boring.
The thing is, radio is a business. You're running a business. And it's like saying to Kaizer Chiefs, why did you buy a striker from Sundowns or wherever else when the other strikers out there? Yes, you might have development at whatever level you have development, but when you're running a commercial radio station, you need to operate as a business. Operating as a business is asking yourself questions like, can the person carry the show that they're needed for? And I'm not talking about myself, Jay.
Yeah.
Can the person carry the responsibility? Can clients be assured that this person will execute our campaigns as is needed? Will the person bring added value over and above what they do on the radio? And added value is just professionalism. Yes, I know we ought to be professional, but not everyone will execute a campaign the way it ought to be executed. All of that adds up. And so I say to that person, if not me or anyone else, then who? And who is that person? And again, I've been lamenting this for the last 5 years that unfortunately, radio managers generally have failed to build household names on radio. You have a lot of people on radio, but I don't know that you have enough people on radio worth their weight that a radio station will run a poach you to come and do their breakfast show. And that's the sad reality of the industry we're in right now. It's not even me being arrogant or being cocky about it. The long and the short is I'm running a business and I am going to put my money on a horse I know is more likely to carry the load that I have than not. That's all it is. You know, it's and like with any industry, people will work until they feel they don't want to work anymore. I mean, imagine your 50-year-old mother gets a gig at another school and your 50-year-old mother is told, what about other teachers? Get other teachers. Motuazo will be 65, but already you want to deadel others. No, people must work until they can't work anymore. That's how it works with every other industry. But people treat entertainment like it's some seesaw or like some playground. That give others a chance. No, your father is a teacher, he's 60 or 55, and he hasn't reached retirement age yet. He must work until he decides what he's sick and tired of working. Why aren't you doing outside hospital saying, give other people a chance? You've been a nurse for the last 30 years. You must stop nursing. Give other nurses a chance. This is life, dude. This is not some playground or some merry-go-round where you must now stop playing on the seesaw because someone wants to play on the seesaw. There are other seesaws out there. Go look for other seesaws.
Do you think it was easier or harder back then because you guys built, I want to say you built the foundation of what radio is today. You know, you guys, I mean, some features that you started are still on other radio stations versus people now, they literally just, it's Gillett. So that comes in, takes those features, does them as is, takes content off social media, and then they call it a day. So radio back when you started to radio now.
Yeah.
How has it evolved?
I think first things first, the internet possibly made life easier for radio, but also spoiled radio. I'll give you an example. I still have memories of listening to pre-internet radio where people had no choice but to be creative.
Yeah.
Because you don't have the internet. You understand that it's theater of the mind, and the research you do is the research that is specific for your show, because no one is going to the same website you went to, and no one is reading the same publication you might have read. No one is going to a 1972 Reader's Digest that you find at your doctor's rooms. God knows why it's still there. But anyway, so no one has had access to that 1972 Reader's Digest that now in 1993, you're going to repurpose for radio content. This is Reader's Digest that came out 20 years prior that still has relevant information that can be repurposed for radio as content and whatever else. Nowadays, people are going to the same websites, the same news wires, and regurgitating the same thing. And for me, the magic of radio is, tell me about something I know in a way I never even thought you could, or in a way I never thought you would. Because eventually, we're all accessing the same information, the same facts. But if you gave 10 radio people the same three headlines, one or two of them would be geniuses in how they repurpose that for radio. The others will probably do the same old thing, or they'll just read and say, look, this is what I just got. The cat sat on the mat. Someone else will talk about the cat sitting on the mat, but turn it into a parody. Someone else will talk about the poetry of the cat being on the mat, but how do we repurpose that in a way that it can relive on social media? So I could read the story. I could turn that story into content that could live on for prosperity and for 100 years. And unfortunately, a lot of radio people have become lazy in that regard, that no one's making an effort anymore. And that's one of the reasons why you're not building household names anymore. You're not building household names anymore because of that, because we have become lazy in our industry.
Okay, we're closing.
Are we not done? Oh, okay.
We are. I feel like I was going to carry on. You're going to work Letabo, you've been working then. Letato and Mpomabwe. You know, you guys worked together. Was it Unrestricted?
Yes, Unrestricted Fresh Breakfast.
Wow, like 20 years ago.
Yeah, so Tato joined me on the Easy Drive. It was afternoon drive show on YFM in 2001. And then 2002, we moved to Breakfast. And Mpomabwe was a listener. And we took her lunch because she'd won a competition on the show. We took her lunch and she became a friend of the show. And she started coming to hang out with us in studio. This was about 2003 or 4. And then she started working with us doing traffic. And then she's never left radio since. So just to reunite with Tato and Mpo is, you know what it feels like? It feels like we've been through the university of life.
You have.
Now it's time to live. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the beauty of the thing also is the fact that the people that last heard us together on the radio, all three of us, chances are they were either 10, between the ages of, let's say, 8 and let's call it 18.
Yes, because I was right in high school and I used to listen to you guys in the morning.
Let's say between the ages of 8 and 18, or 8 and 20. All of us are 20 years older now. Isn't that dope to reunite after 20 years?
That's insane.
Where you're now doing life. You've been, myself and, I mean, Mpo is divorced. I'm divorced. Tato is still happily married. But we're going through life. We're parents. The challenges we're dealing with 23, 24 years ago are different to the challenges now. But we are still on the same boat with the people that grew up with us. Many people, many captains of industry will tell you that we raised them 20 years ago. Now the CEOs, the managing directors, they own companies, they run budgets, they run governments even. And we're still in touch with those people. So for me, it's quite a thing that we're reuniting to, as it were, have one last dance. That's exactly what it feels like, one last dance. So yeah, man.
What should we look forward to?
A lot of fun. I listen to a lot of radio and I'm not hearing people having fun on the radio. Yes, there's one or two laughs, but I almost feel like a lot of people sound like that work. Radio's fun, man. The privilege of being on radio should not be, And I'm not saying being irreverent about it and not respect the medium, but have fun. People are going through stuff. I don't want to listen to you and you're also going through stuff.
Yeah.
But we can't both laugh at each other. So there'll be a lot of entertainment, a lot of music, a lot of, we're all in this together. Because that's what the medium of radio is about. It's about community. Not many other mediums will offer you a sense of community, belonging, and, oh my goodness, we're all going through this, like radio. So you can look forward to that, and I love a hell of a lot more. And you can also look forward to a lot of, we're going to be on the street a lot.
That's good.
In fact, our first show will be on the road. Our first show will be on the road. I can't give away too much because,
I was going to ask, like, do they know that you're telling people this now already?
Like I said, our first show will be on the road, and you can also expect massive giveaways. We want to be doing giveaways that are massive. I feel like Trump right now. There'll be giveaways, massive giveaways. You've never seen giveaways like this. That's what you can look forward to. It's going to be amazing. I'm excited about it, man. I love radio. I love changing people's lives, and that will never change.
Okay, I promise it's the very last one.
You need to go.
How do you, this English word dribbles me, compartmentalize what you bring to radio and what you don't? Because I know you read a lot. I know you listen to the news a lot. I know you like politics. I know you love music. Like, you are an encyclopedia on your own. So how do you pick what you bring to radio and which parts of Tato or DJ Phrase that you bring to radio and what you don't?
I notoriously overshare on radio anyway. But what compartment of my life is unlocked at any given time is determined by the moment we're in. So we could be talking about something that unlocks a memory or an experience that I've never shared, but I choose to share at that moment. Mm. So everything is linked to the moment, everything. But like I said, I notoriously overshare, and half the time I will leave the radio on some, oh flip, I can't believe I shared that. But I also don't mind, because often I don't share gratuitously. I share because it might bring value to you or might remind you that we are all going through stuff. But you can also look forward to that. I overshare like I'm 80.
You're that guy.
Yeah.
Aren't you 80?
I have a way to go. I have a way to go. But even when I'm 80, I'll be doing Zima FM, radio that frames your life.
Wow.
I think I'm a genius.
I don't think so. You and your dad jokes. Thank you so much for doing this and answering the questions. Yeah. I didn't think you would, but thank you.
Dude, I'm not scared of questions because the answer is up to me, Agir. No question scares me, like nothing. Thank you. We're done.
Yes, we are.
Another episode of DMs and stuff that you want to know about me on Wow, What a Week. Thank you for all of your questions, your concerns, and your comments. Please keep them going. Let's keep the conversation going in the comment section at the bottom. Otherwise, I will meet you on the radio on 959 Kaya FM on the 1st of July. It's going to be incredible. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we're looking forward to doing radio for you, with you, and about you. Until next week, coming to you from Discover TV, we are a part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email them on waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Discover TV, let them be your stage. They're out in Four Ways, Johannesburg. Hit them up and see how they can make you look good, make your podcast look fantastic. To Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works, thank you for the cinematography. Keleso Modisa Geng sitting across from me. She's our executive producer. And of course, you. Until next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.